There is nothing more heinous than the idea of adult humans who should protect children going against the grain altogether and wanting to harm them. And this particular case today is one that stands out because it is just so heinous on every level. Police uncovered a plot in Michigan by four adults all about kidnapping a child, torturing them, eventually essaying them, and then burning them alive. Luckily, on this occasion, the police found out before this group of absolutely malevolent human beings were able to go ahead with their grotesque plot. This is the Michigan kidnap plot. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Let's talk about today's horrific case. There's no other way of describing it. Horrific. So on the 3rd of May, 2018, in Michigan, in the United States, allegations were made against a man called Matthew Toole and a woman called Talia Furman. So allegations about this couple's very deviant sexual behaviour had come to light. And the reason that they had come to light was during a jailhouse interview at Allegan County Jail. An unnamed inmate had basically come forward, said that they'd met up with a friend, Matthew Toole, and his girlfriend, Talia Furman, on the 24th of April, 2018. And during that encounter with them, he had been shown a video on Toole's phone of a sexual act. And that actual sexual act involved a child. And that Toole then indicated that the intention was he was going to go ahead and have sex with the girl in the video when she turned 9. So this deviant is literally bragging to a friend, to somebody that they know, that firstly, they've got sexual material about a child on their technology, but also that they are waiting till that child turns 9 and then they're going to violate them in the most heinous of ways. Now, what's interesting here is the psychology of this perpetrator. Often, as a human being, we wander around believing that most people think the same as us. And for the most part, that makes us good societal beings who connect effectively with one another. We have a morality, we have an ethics within ourselves, within our nature. That means that we act according to the rules and regulations of law on a natural level. We don't even need to think about it, we just know what's right and wrong. However, that same mindset exists in all humans. And for the most part, if you are a deviant predator wandering around with the most malevolent sexual intent towards children, you will often believe that you're normal and that everybody else feels the same way. And that's why we see networks getting built, because sadly, these kind of deviants do meet other people with similar mindsets. And there's a testing out period. The testing out period is figuring out whether you can push boundaries with certain friends and people around you and therefore form alliances and allegiances in your deviant mindsets. So essentially, what Toole is doing here is he's testing out one of his friends. Can I show him this video? Is he going to seem interested? Is he going to seem excited? Is he going to seem disgusted? There'll be something about the reaction that tells him whether he can go further to the next stage of maybe introducing him to this arena of abuse, or hoping that he has others that he can be introduced to that will give him access to children, for example. So that testing out is how these predators form, like I say, alliances, but it backfires on this occasion. And it backfires because the man who he shows the video to is absolutely disgusted by this, because yes, this guy might be in prison, might not be the most, shall we say, law-abiding citizen, but the idea of being this grotesque towards children, this malevolent, this deceptive, this abandoning of who you are as an adult, which is to protect children, on the whole, we all know that that's our ward to do. This adult might be locked up, but it doesn't matter. It's been obviously resting heavy on his conscience. He's horrified at the actions of Toole and he wants no part of it. So at this point, very fortunately, he's taken seriously and Michigan State Police launch an investigation into the pair that have been brought forward to them. Now on the 10th of May, police end up going to the home of Toole and Furman. They are living together at this point in Springfield, and at this point they remove both of them to be interviewed, and they're interviewed separately. Clearly that's important because you can't interview them together. They'll be backing each other up, won't they? And this whole impetus is to explore the potential of these sexual allegations being real. Police also seized evidence from the pair's home. So this includes laptops, phones, suspected drugs as well. So there was suspected methamphetamine on the property. And this is because clearly you don't want them to have time to delete, remove, or shall we say, lose and destroy items that might be deeply incriminating. When the police start to look on those devices, you can imagine that you are innocent until proven guilty. And hey, somebody's come forward in jail, had a conversation. They could be making it all up. They could have an axe to grind with the couple. There might be absolutely no weight to the allegations. And you imagine that that's how the police are feeling when they first start to look at the footage. But it's going to play out in a very, very different way. Because on the pair's devices is evidence of sexual crimes committed by the pair against at least two different children. Now, I know that we all appreciate that women abuse as well as men. You just have to watch my video on Vanessa George, who is a British female paedophile, to see that these monsters exist, whether they're male or female. However, the propensity and level of offending tends to be much higher in males than females. And I think that it's always more of a challenge for women, in particular, to manage the knowledge that females do go ahead and do these horrible things to children. In fact, so even though we know it happens, it's very hard to wrap our heads around because the idea of being a female often comes down to our biology. And even though I struggle to have babies naturally, I have managed to do that with the help of IVF. And therefore, as a mother, my primary role with my children is to nurture them, protect them, love them, and know that if anybody came within spitting distance to damage my child, they better be a really fast runner. They better be really good at ducking as well, because I'm pretty good with a shot of throwing a heavy object. I promise you that that would be something that many of us relate to as parents. We know that feeling. So when women are part of this, much like when you think about Ian Brady and Myra Hindley, Fred and Rose West, these are all couples who were together and were connected over their deviant behaviours towards children. It's hard to wrap your heads around. And what's even more challenging is seeing that women can lead as much as follow. Because I often think that people will be like, oh, it's a folie à deux, it's a delusion because of their shared connection. But on the whole, it tends to be led by the male. I would say that makes us feel safer because we want to believe that women don't naturally get involved in these scenarios, but I don't think it plays out in truth. I would say that women can equally be as malevolent and even more malevolent than their male counterparts. So the police start searching the phones of the suspects and then it gets bigger. So they find text messages that basically indicates that there's a plan to kidnap a child, which would basically be at gunpoint if necessary. And I'm gonna share with you one of the messages between these individuals. It read, I want to hurt something. Have the plan for after it's broken. Can make it gone without worry of discovery. You have a place for the playtime. We just need the toy. So yes, they're speaking in code, obviously, but we all know what that code is. They're talking about taking a child. They're talking about harming that child to a point where, quote, it's broken, and then disposing of that child. And the fact that they talk about it as an object means that they can disassociate themselves from the reality of the heinous actions they're contemplating. You know, call it a toy, call it a something, just don't refer to it in the way that would make that child human. Another text message said, anything at this point, lol, I seriously contemplated pistol whipping a woman and snatching her daughter at the store last night. That demonstrates the predator within. It talks about a containment of the monster and a losing sense of that containment. So even though they're messages and people can say, well, it's prone to fantasy, people often say things where they're resorting to scenarios and actions that they would never actually carry out in real life. But what we're actually talking about in these messages is that monster that lies behind the mask, who is finding it more and more difficult to contain the way that they feel. And they're just thinking about acting out. They're getting to that point of fever because there is no fantasy in these individuals' minds without action that gratifies that fantasy. And they're obviously titillating one another with these conversations to a point where it's getting more and more difficult to not just go ahead. And as was noted in that text message, literally attack a female mother to remove the child from them. Also in those text messages, they're considering abducting a child from a parade or Walmart or a major car park without security cameras. So they're really contemplating the best place to find a child. And actually, they're really effective places. Just think about the kids that you see at Walmart or in car parks or certainly on parades where everybody has those rose-coloured spectacles on because it's a family-orientated environment. Everyone's having a good time. You want your kids to just be free and have fun. And you don't realise that these monsters are lurking in the background, literally waiting to pounce. Now, during this period of time of exchanging messages, they'd also been exchanging messages with another man, a guy by the name of David Bailey. Now, this is how it works. It's never enough for an individual to just crave these ideas themselves, because that would make them aware of what a monster they are, of how broken they are, of how deviant they are, of how ill they are with respect. I'm not talking about ill on a disease level. I'm talking about sick in the mind. They're sick in the mind. They have a predilection that is so deviant, it's beyond belief. But because they want to normalize it, because they want to sit with that feeling of being attracted to a child and think to themselves, well, it can't just be me, because they want to make themselves seem less of a monster to themselves, they will find other individuals who have that shared belief system that it's totally acceptable to do these heinous things. That's how paedophile networks extend. So David Bailey and the couple have been texting, and again, he's been brought into this idea of detailing plans to abuse and kill a young child. And also, in several of the messages, there's a woman named Jamie LaPointe. She's mentioned. So now we've got four individuals. Now, David Bailey was LaPointe's living boyfriend. And the evidence they retrieved from that home where they shared, it revealed that both Bailey and LaPointe had actually engaged in the conspiracies with Toole and Furman. And the more that people talk about these things, the more that people bring others in, the more likely the offending will be, because they have validation points, they have permission bases. There are other people positively stroking you saying, this is okay, we should definitely do this and we will help. And that makes this such a high level danger for any child that comes into contact with them. Now, LaPointe's brought in for questioning by the police. That happens on the 17th of July. She admitted to the police that she had actually sent sexually abusive material to her husband, David Bailey. So they are actually sharing child sexual exploitation material. And on the same day that she's interviewed, David Bailey's residence is searched. Obviously, a warrant was got for that. He was at that point driving a tractor trailer in Ohio, so it gives him no point of time to actually go and destroy any evidence that they want to get hold of. Police then in Ohio seize Bailey's cell phone. This is during a stop when they actually pull him over, make sure that they've got him banged to rights, essentially. And the Michigan police then take possession of the phone because they've got a search warrant for it. So they are very intent on drawing out any incriminating information that they find on these devices. Now, we get to the 18th of July, 2018. A Calhoun County DHHS worker, they contact the state police about a person who's identified herself as the ex-girlfriend of David and Jamie. And this individual apparently has information about child abuse and also about plans to kidnap a child. So this group have obviously been spreading their malice in other directions without recognizing that that incriminates them further. And like I said, they are clearly of a mindset that most people have these bizarre predilections, and they felt quite comfortable sharing them with individuals who will have been horrified by what they've said. And most people would be like, okay, well, why didn't those individuals who heard this horrible information go straight to the police and discuss it? Well, the person who obviously saw the information on the phone did. They did speak to police in the jailhouse. But I think for individuals who are listening to a group of people talking about a particular fantasy, it's hard to imagine, if we know them, that they're really capable of going ahead and creating such actions. So most of us will just think, that's disgusting, they're grotesque, what horrible human beings. But you don't actually think, and they are obviously going to go and action that kidnap plan and harm a child. Most people just want to believe that the world that they inhabit is a safe world, and even the individuals who seem a little bit odd would never actually turn out to be the monsters they truly are. Nonetheless, If somebody were to ever say that to me, and I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, will agree, we would straight up speak to the police, because you can never take a risk where a child's safety is concerned. And these individuals who are discussing this, even if it's a fantasy, have issues with their psychology and certainly need some kind of intervention. And like I said, we never take risks where children's safety is concerned. Now, that witness who came forward, she said she was basically sat around a table with Jamie, Talia, David and Matthews, and they all discussed a kidnapping plan together. And the individuals that were talking in this conversation, they were really going into detail. So they considered taking a child from a country fair in either Eaton, Jackson, Branch or Hillsdale counties. And she said that the group had basically got their phones out and they were looking at the dates for different country fairs. So they're really conceiving of how this can be made possible. They also found out which stage events at the fairs were geared towards children. And this was all about helping them to consider whether they would have the best chance to go ahead and abduct the child. Now, at the point of this horrendous group plotting all these ideas and coming up with this plan, Jamie LaPointe, she was 18. So they decided that because she was 18, she could be used as a decoy because she could pass as a younger teenager. When it comes down to it, an 18-year-old can easily look 14. And if you're a child yourself and you see somebody who's a peer or comparable in age to maybe an older sibling, then obviously the relationship that you would have with them would be very different to the relationship that you would have with an adult around you. So if somebody comes over to you and you see them as a peer, albeit an older peer, you are less likely to be as concerned authoritarian-wise by their actions as you would be if an adult came over. So if they do something to you, you're likely to retaliate because you're not going to be happy that they've done something and you see them as somebody that you relate to, like I said, as a younger peer, but a peer nonetheless. Whereas if an adult came over and told you off or did something, you might be more likely to go and get your parents to help because you'd be like, hey, there's this weird adult that just came over and took something from me, because that's what they're planning on doing. That Jamie's going to go over to a child, asked to use their phone, and clearly when you're an older peer, for a younger peer, it's going to be hard to say no, because you're going to want to seem cool, you're going to want to seem kind, and they're only asking you to borrow the phone. And then the minute that they get hold of that phone, she was going to run off with it so that she could run away. And that hopefully would mean that the child would start to chase that particular individual. So LaPointe's running, the child's following. Then she would throw the phone into a rental car so that the child then jumps into the rental car trying to grab it, and at that point they would be kidnapped. And with respect, that's a very plausible plan, because you can see it playing out, can't you? Go to a 12-year-old kid, ask to borrow the phone, run off with the phone, the kid's gonna chase you, unless they have an adult very close to them that they can call and ask for help of. But most kids will just need your reaction, run. And then of course, the absolute relief when the phone's thrown into a car, because the kid's gonna be like, oh, thank God, they've given up, I'm gonna get my phone back. And then of course, the worst case scenario would play out for that child. And believe me, the plan that this group had was absolutely the worst case scenario for any child, any human being per se, because it is as malevolent and sick as it could possibly be. So the group together had decided that once they'd captured a child, and I use that term really appropriately, they were looking to capture a child. As in our worst nightmares, this child is basically prey. That's the only way that it can be described as. And after they'd done that, they would take that terrified child to a rented cabin in northern Michigan or Indiana. Then they would torture them, and they hoped, apparently, during these exchanges that they wouldn't kill the child, at least not initially. So after they had put them through a horrific amount of torture, the child would still be alive. And the reason that they wanted that child to still be alive is because they wanted to put the child in a burning barrel where they would be burned alive. Even to say those words is soul-destroying on a million different levels, but to envisage a group of adults discussing this with a desire to actually go ahead and do it. Because bear in mind, we are not talking about individuals who are just talking about fantasies and doing it in a very malevolent way and a disturbing way, but actually having no plot and plan to put it into action. These individuals have a history. They are child abusers. So this is something that they want. This is something that they're encouraging each other to conceive of more. And this is something where they are actually planning and plotting to put this into action in a way that they think they can get away with it. The idea of not only watching the fear and horror in that child's experience as they harm them, not only knowing the isolation, the absolute horror and terror that the child would endure on a psychological and emotional level, but to then want to see them not only tortured, dealing with all of the pain, agony, fear that they would endure, to then finally put them into a burning barrel, burn them alive, so that their last moments would not just be what I described, but also excruciating final agony as they burnt to death. It is just devastating to even believe that people can consider these kind of crimes, that people can sit and get turned on, because let's be honest, that's what's happening. They're sexually motivated by this sadism, that they are so broken as human beings that this seems like a positive activity and a sexually stimulating reality for them. Then after they had done all of those things, they were going to light the cabin on fire, dispose of any evidence, and then they could just carry on with their new lives after the plan had been carried out, because clearly they'd be making a new start with a whole new world where they had actually graduated not just from being paedophiles, but becoming child torturers and murderers. That is what they were aiming for. As a group, that's what they were talking about. Now, I don't know about you guys, but if you're anything like me, I question who I am as a human being all the time. I'm always walking around thinking, I'm a little bit weird. I'm a little bit of an oddball, a little bit eccentric. And I am. I'm all those things. And sometimes I have thoughts that are a little bit intrusive. Sometimes I have thoughts that are a bit left field. Sometimes I think of things that I would like to do to people who hurt other people. And I think, it's probably a little bit, you know, over the top there, Emma. Not sure the liquidizer is an appropriate punishment for anyone. But I'm saying that even when I have those extreme thoughts, and they're always based on justice, you know, always based on wanting to protect other people, but I know that they are quite extreme. What I'm saying is these kind of cases remind me of just how sane and normal I am, of just how typical I am. Because when you see the kind of deviancy, depravity, the level of malevolence of certain human beings, you realize that even in your worst moments, when you are genuinely thinking about introducing liquidizers and graters for certain individuals who do horrible things to children, the truth is you are nowhere near the realm of sadist that I've just described where these human beings are concerned. It's as simple as that. These cases remind us of what compassionate, empathic, good human beings we are, because we are so far away from the kind of conversations and desired actions and outcomes of these kind of individuals I'm describing right now. Now, also in the interview with the police, LaPointe admitted that she had been viewing child sexually exploitive information with Bailey. So it's referred to often in the press as child pornography, but clearly children can't consent to anything pornographic. But we are talking about it in the context of sexually exploitative pictures, photographs of children without their consent being sent to LaPointe and Bailey, shared between one another. She also told the police that Bailey would basically view that kind of material whilst he was sitting next to her. And this is something that we see where an individual who is older is grooming a younger person into that mindset. So bear in mind, LaPointe is younger and she is 18. And from what I understand about her background, she's potentially had quite an abusive background, including SA. So to some degree, Bailey viewing that kind of information next to her is about tentatively drawing her in and also normalizing it. And that will give her a permission base to start viewing it. But also, it's about, like I said, grooming her into that space. Now, you can't groom a well-adjusted, typical human into this kind of space. If somebody sits next to you and they're viewing images of a sexual nature with children involved, you are going to, well, I imagine, quietly back off whilst calling the emergency services immediately. Or I know that some burly blokes and some non-burly women would take actions into their own hands. And let's just say, that technology would find its way, I don't know, into some kind of local orifice of the individual who'd been viewing it at a very high speed with quite a lot of power behind it. The point is, every average typical human would respond very badly if someone dared to view such material anywhere near us, because it's reprehensible, it goes against everything that we stand for, and it's revolting, and also it's illegal. So you would feel actually very violated if somebody was anywhere near you with it, because you'd feel like it was making you a part of something you didn't want to have anything to do with. But like I said, she has sat there, she has been there with him as he's done those things, and she has not said no. So after she's admitted that she's been seeing this material with him sat next to her, she's then asked if any sexual assault had actually occurred in her home. She said it hadn't, as far as she was concerned, with any of her own children, but she did admit that the pair had touched a one-year-old girl and a four-year-old boy who the pair babysat. Now, I don't even want to imagine where the poor mother who employed them to babysit's mind went when she was actually confronted with this reality, because she has clearly entrusted this couple to look after her children, and without a shadow of a doubt, the fact that there was a young girl there would have made her feel a sense of safety. It's just the way that we are in life. It's why women who engage with these kind of predators, because they're of equal measure, are so dangerous, because it puts you at ease. If it's a woman, if it's a girl, you're thinking, oh, what could go wrong? You know, this person can be trusted because she's female. And we're so wrong about that, because these kind of human beings do exist, but that's what would have happened where the mother was concerned employing this couple to look after her one-year-old girl and four-year-old boy. Apparently, she said that they had, quote, touched the girl everywhere they could. She also told the police that she'd taken photos of the baby naked for her and Bailey's sexual gratification. Just let that sink in. So she's willingly taking photographs of a baby, and that is to turn them on sexually. That's to give him what he wants at a cost of these children's safety. It is beyond disgusting. Police also found several photos of LaPointe actually holding the baby, and also three videos that had been sent from LaPointe to Bailey. Now, after the police learnt of this, obviously they went and spoke to the mother of the children who were babysat by LaPointe and Bailey. She was utterly horrified. She said that she'd actually found the couple after posting an ad on Facebook looking for a babysitter. Now, you cannot ever feel a responsibility for another person's actions. Clearly, when it comes down to it, this couple are the deviants in this situation. Now, if ever there was an absolute warning, a call out for us to hear just how these predators operate, it's in that discussion that played out with that mother and the police. She is going about her business, trying to find childcare opportunities for her children, because clearly life is tough. You know, you have to work. You don't often get a lot of space. Maybe having a social life is something that's almost impossible if you don't have the right family structure and support around you. So clearly people look in other directions to get help to look after their children. However, predators look for those chinks in our armor. It's as simple as that.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details, and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
And these kind of individuals are scouring the web for opportunities to get their hands on your kids. Simple as that. So if you put a shout out on Facebook, then probably 8 out of 10 times, you're going to get good people. But 2 out of 10 times, you're going to get predators, because they're everywhere. And even though that sounds alarmist in nature, it isn't alarmist in nature. For the most part, human beings are really good. What I'm saying is, you have predators who are actively looking for vulnerable children, and a child is vulnerable if their parent or primary caregiver is not present with them when you leave them with individuals who are relative strangers. Even when you're doing it for the best reasons in the world, such as going to work. So knowing the background of these individuals, checking their criminal history, ensuring they have good references, making sure they're working with a reputable agency, these are all at least blockers for predators. I know they get through. I know no matter what you do, no matter what checks you make, there will always be someone get through, but it makes it more challenging. It's a real real testament to why putting those kind of shout outs on Facebook is a bad idea, because these individuals are waiting to pounce, and that's their perfect opportunity to do so. And you, of course, are leaving them thinking you can trust them, but actually opening the door to the most horrendous abuse where their children are concerned. And bear in mind that if those pictures of those babies and young child have been shared online, they'll be shared ad infinitum. They just go like wildfire around these deviant individuals' connections. And so they're violated every single time one of these not rights views them. Now, police discovered that Toole and Furman, they had apparently allegedly sexually assaulted a three-month-old girl and a three-year-old boy on multiple occasions. So that was between October 2017 and February 2018. And the police claimed to have seized videos and photographs of those assaults and also other child sexual exploitation material. They were then arrested for those in mid-August 2018. Now, after the arrests, the group were charged with manufacturing and distributing child sexual images, as well as criminal sexual conduct and child abuse, for abusing their own children to make the child sexual exploitation material, which is the biggest abandonment of care and compassion any parent can actually make. I cannot understand how a human being is gifted with a priceless life of a child. They're gifted with the opportunity of creating the next generation, and they betray them so heinously. It is incomprehensible for me to imagine being anything but positive to children, let alone harming a hair on anybody else's child. The idea of harming a hair on the head of my own child, it goes against everything that I stand for, and I think everybody relates to that. It's so uncanny for me to wrap my head around this kind of willingness to totally decimate and desecrate your own children. Also in August 2018, Jamie Lapointe, Talia Furman, David Bailey and Matthew Toole were charged with three counts each of conspiracy to commit murder, conspiracy to commit kidnapping and conspiracy to commit criminal sexual conduct. Now, all of those charges possibly carry a life sentence, as in never going to see the light of day sentence when it comes down to being imprisoned. With respect, can we just avoid any court case, throw them into the prison cell and just walk away? I know you have to feed them. I appreciate it. You know, bit of bread, maybe water three times a day. But just for the rest of society, just lock them up, leave them. That's all that needs to happen. No one with these mindsets should walk our streets. No one should be allowed to breathe free air when they were willing to do something so disgusting that it actually makes me feel sick having to actually describe it to you. So a sentence of life, well, that would still mean that they had bestowed on themselves a better grace than they would have on the child that they were going to take and kill, because they would have ended that kid's future. At least these guys will have a future, even if that future is literally banged up. And like I said, I think they deserve every second of whatever sentence they're given. And it was actually on September the 18th, 2018, that the Michigan Attorney General's office announced the charges, which was just shocking for the community. They basically indicted David Bailey, who was 37. He was of Coldwater and formerly of Kalamazoo. Matthew Toole, who was 32 at this point, he was of Battle Creek. Talia Furman, who was 32, she was from Springfield. And Jamie Lapointe, who's 19, just 19, she's from Athens. And when the community heard that, they were absolutely blindsided, because when you realise that you're dealing with people who you know from a local community are engaged in such reprehensible actions, it makes the way that you live and the place that you live feel less safe. Now, State Police Computer Crimes Unit Detective Sergeant Gerald Yacht, he was the person who led the case, he told the Battle Creek Inquirer that each member of the group was, quote, abusing their own child as well as others. He said, they committed acts on their own children and were making sexually abusive material. He said, they were all sharing and exploiting their own children and other children. He actually said that the foursome was, quote, one of the most heinous groups of monsters that we've dealt with. Now, bear that in mind. This is a police officer who deals with these kind of cases, and he's saying this is one of the most heinous groups of monsters that we've dealt with. Also, when he's talking about them sharing and exploiting their own children and others' children, This is sadly really common. So what we see, particularly when we look at the technological sharing of indecent images of children, often these networks are basically promising views for views. So you'll have them abusing their children, sharing it with another paedophile who's abusing their children, and so on and so forth. And often this leads to physical proximity, where they actually meet up with other paedophiles and share their children with them. It is as grotesque as that, and sadly, it is as common as that. The story that I've just told is not unusual. This is how these predators act. They create networks, and they create networks because, you know, they enjoy abusing their own kids, but hey, it's kind of very titillating for them to imagine doing the same to others and vice versa. Can you imagine exploiting and destroying your children on such a level? I have worked with it in my career on too many occasions to actually describe, but it is so sad that I can say that statement, that there are too many occasions that I can describe playing this out in therapeutic context where I've dealt with children who have been abused this way, both as children and when they are adults, coming to terms with the hideous fallout, collateral damage and trauma of these monsters. So this police officer is saying, listen, these are the worst of the worst. He actually said that quote, these are the worst of the worst people. We like to think that this can't happen here, and it does. It happens here all the time. I have to say, I find it really heartening when somebody like this officer speaks, because I think that the police always want to make you feel like they're in charge and that they can manage your communities and that good things are happening more than bad things. And therefore, you can dilute information. I see it happen quite a lot where even in the news, I'll hear commentators, lawyers say, you know, this is really rare and this is horrible, but deeply unusual. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's absolutely not. Child sex trafficking is massive. It's massive in the Western world. My God, go to somewhere like the Philippines and Thailand and countries that are beautiful with fantastic people. But bear in mind, the dark underbelly of sex trafficking is massive across the board. It happens all the time. Child sexual pornography, this information that is shared amongst millions and millions and millions of human beings, both male and female, is huge. It's an industry. And when you have an officer come out and tell the truth about that, to say it happens here all the time, I think that that is a call out to us. It is a reminder to us that in our neighborhoods, on our streets, at our schools, these predators are lurking, and we have to be so aware, because then we can pick up on those things that if we wouldn't have that mindset, we might ignore. So the way a particular individual talks to your child, the way that they might act around you, notice it. Because these instinctual realities play out for so many parents, and we don't act because we think we'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Because it just feels so terrifying to imagine that our child could have access to somebody who'd want to harm them this way. And bear in mind, we're talking about the worst of the worst in this case. We're talking about people who want to kill children. But sexual molestation of children, it often happens by adults who are kind to them, who groom them, who are lovely to them. So the child doesn't even know what's happening to them is wrong. They might have a feeling within that they wish these certain things weren't happening when they're with that person, but then they'll think about all the great things that that person does with them. And so that minimizes that feeling that feels wrong. And that means that they're not talking about what's happening to them with their primary caregivers, or they're dealing with a primary caregiver who's the main abuser, who's making them feel so confused because it's love. This is what loving dads and mums do, and so on and so forth. So the spectrum of child abuse is so vast that so often children never talk about their abuse because they didn't even know it was abuse. And by the time they realize it is abuse, they might be young adolescents or even adults. And then they have to deal with that down the line, not knowing what to do or how to feel about these individuals that they love and that they still love at times. And yet when they analyze the actions, they realize what they were doing was illegal, immoral, and devastating. This is why child abuse is so grotesque. Because even when I'm talking about the spectrum and one end being an adult who convinces themselves they're in a loving relationship with a child, even though it's sexual, which is insane, but they don't want to harm that child in their mind. They want to love that child. It's just that their love is a different love, and so on and so forth. Then you have the very extreme end, which we're talking about here, which is child molestation and murder. So that spectrum is enormous, but it's happening all the time. And like I said, we should be aware to point out those idiosyncrasies, those oddnesses about certain adults in our child's life that we don't feel necessarily is that appropriate without feeling bad for doing that. If we did that more, children would be saved. Now, the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, they said that the group were very, very close to carrying out their plan before they were actually arrested. So they were saying that this had gone way past fantasy, that they were looking at literally pinpointing potential parades where they could go and carry out the plot. And also they come up with a plan that essentially could get them, quote, their prey. You know, they could have their individual toy, as they put it, because they'd come up with something that really would play out and you could see it working. It's as simple as that. And how fortunate we are that that individual came forward and had that conversation with law enforcement. How fortunate we are that somebody risked offending, that somebody took that chance and had that conversation, because the chances are they saved not necessarily one child, multiple children's lives. Because when people get to the point where they've pushed themselves and given themselves a permission base that we're talking about with these individuals, once they've succeeded in a plan, well, they'll have a taste for it. They'll do it again and again and again. And that's how we end up with child serial killers like Myra Hindley and Ian Brady. It's as simple as that. We get to March 2019. At this point, Talia Furman pled no contest to a single count of first-degree criminal sexual conduct in Calhoun County. Now, her attorney said to the court that Furman was not a leader, that she'd actually been sexually abused as a child, and that Tula had got her heavily involved in drugs. So what? Sorry, does that sound discompassionate? I apologise if you think it does sound discompassionate. I don't have any compassion for history when history makes you into a monster. I don't, because I've worked too often with so many people who've been horrendously abused as children, and they turn into the most profoundly beautiful human beings. Don't get me wrong, they're damaged to some degree. Don't get me wrong, there is collateral impact, and that can take years to resolve. Sometimes it never resolves. Sometimes they harm themselves because those people have convinced them that they're the bad person. And that is just heartbreaking for me. However, in my entire career, working for 2 decades in therapy and often working with individuals who've been horribly violated as children, in my entire time doing that, I came across one individual who was horribly abused as a child and became an abuser. And that person was moved on to somebody else. I'm not the right person to work with somebody who offends against children. That's as much for that individual who's the abuser as it is for me as a practitioner, because you don't want a super judgy practitioner. And I'm sorry, it's above my pay grade and I'm not going to be affected, right? Doesn't matter how many people told me it would be good for my clinical practice and my experience, I'm not going to be effective. I'm saying out of the countless individuals who were horribly abused, they did not become molesters. But it could be said that as an individual born with a certain predilection, you can also find yourself abused as a child. You can't create a paedophile. You just are one. Her sexual molestation as a child doesn't mean that she developed a taste for it, unless she literally had that within her nature. Most people are horrified by being sexually molested. Most people are traumatized psychologically by it. They don't think, yeah, feels like a good idea to go ahead and do that to another kid. You know, they stop the cycle. They don't continue it. And I appreciate that a lot of you might be shouting at the screen now saying, yes, but when you look in the background of most sex offenders, as in paedophiles, you will often find that they were abused as children. I will agree, there is a higher number of individuals who are sex offenders towards children who were actually abused themselves as kids. But the vast majority of people abused as kids are never turning out this way. They are absolutely horrified by the idea of abusing a child. What we can say is statistically, yes, there are a higher level of individuals who become paedophiles who experience molestation as children, but maybe it's because there was something broken about their nature and about their predisposition and predilection that meant that they just carried it on because it didn't actually traumatize them. It was something that excited them. It still comes down to the fact that they're just broken individuals. End of. Simple as. So no, I don't accept that Furman was just somebody who was following and that she'd just been abused as a child and this is what led to her carrying on down this path. She was fully engaged, whether she was taking drugs or otherwise, and she had an option to say no. In April 2019, she was sentenced to 25 to 70 years in prison for this crime. She said, "I am really sorry to even be here. I accept that I deserve where I'm going." I would say that that is something that gives me hope for her. I do think that she'll have a proclivity towards children. I think that there is something deeply broken in her psyche. And I think that she needs a lot of therapy and help. And I think that what she did was utterly grotesque. But the fact that she stood there and took full responsibility, basically saying that she's sorry to be there because clearly she is sorry to be there on the level that she's going to be locked up probably for the rest of her life or a big portion of it. But also, I think she's genuinely saying, I take responsibility for what I did. I don't have any excuses to make. I chose this path. And I think that that gives her a breath of opportunity with the right support. And also, when she is freed, potentially in years to come, if she ever gets freed, that she'll sign the sex offenders register, that she'll be kept away from children. Maybe with that work, she can pose less of a danger to children. I'm not going to say she won't pose a danger to children, because she has. And that means that we can never believe fully that she wouldn't do again. In March 2019, Matthew Toole, he pleaded no contest to two counts of first degree criminal sexual conduct. Bear in mind, they have to go guilty. Literally, there's video evidence. So this isn't about them all standing there and saying, okay, I did it, I'm sorry. This is about them having no other option. And it would look very bad if they were not guilty when evidence is going to be introduced that means that there's no option to say that any further and they would be absolutely decimated by a prosecution. So yes, they're pleading no contest, but they're pleading no contest because there's no other option. So he was given consecutive sentences of between 25 and 70 years for those offences. Then in June 2019, this is in Branch County, Talia Furman, she pled guilty to charges of conspiracy to commit first-degree sexual assault and conspiracy to kidnap. She told the court that the group of four had met basically after Toole and Bailey connected on Craigslist. She said, yes, we did plot to abduct a young girl from a public area, such as a fairground. We plotted to take her to a secluded area to be raped and said it was a very much a recurring fantasy of hers and Toole's. And she was actually sentenced in August 2019 between 25 and 50 years. That was on the conspiracy to commit first-degree criminal sexual conduct. And she was also given 11 to 50 years for conspiracy to kidnap. Those sentences are to be served concurrently with the others that she'd previously been given. Don't know about you, but I just think a bit of a consecutive sentence would be better. Just consecutively. You know, particularly the 50 years consecutively. So it'd be 100 years and then, I don't know, she'd never see the light of day again. Anybody with that kind of fantasy, anybody admitting to that, they need to be locked up. We can take no risks with them, you know? They might get out and not reoffend. I don't care. Don't give them the option. Listen, we have to protect the most vulnerable and children are the most vulnerable. If there is even a chance, a small window of opportunity that this person may not change, may strike again, just keep them locked up. It's as simple as that. Now, following her sentencing, she told the court that she will change. Yeah, she'll change. She said, I can only be a better person now. Yes, you are right, because you are just the worst person that humanity can ever form and forge. Simple as that. You are the worst person. When we look at lowest of the low of the low of the low of the low, you're right there. There's a picture of you. Just a picture of you. When definition, lowest of the low, Furnham's face is there. Simple as that. She went on to say, I can only change what I can do. I only hope to be a better person when I go home and nothing will happen like this again in the following years. That isn't even firm. That's the worst kind of statement ever. Sorry, can we just go through that statement? So, I can only change what I can do. I can only change what I can do. Just before we let you out, because you know, just got to be careful with these things. Are you saying that you have changed? I'm saying that I am. I can only change what I can change. Okay, but you're like a horrendous child abuser and also a child murder plotter and you genuinely came up with some really heinous things. So we just want to check. Are you saying that when you think about what you planned and plotted and the way you acted, that you have changed since then? What I'm saying is that I can only change what I can change. And if it's changed, it's changed. And if it hasn't changed, I'm just a massive risk to children. So just going to have to try and do better. I just give me a few minutes. Just whilst we're just here, could you just back slowly into that dark room over there? That dark room says human-sized liquidizer. Yeah, does it? I think it may say something like that. I'm just saying, just go there for a bit whilst I talk to the parole board. I don't know, it just seems to be a whirring sound. It seems like a big whirring sound in that room that says human-sized liquidizer. Just go into that room, okay? Just go into that room, I promise you, because it will mean you have changed and we no longer have to worry about you. It's a remedy. It's a remedy. Just go on, back. Don't turn around and look in. Just back slowly into the room, backwards. Yeah, okay. I'll be back soon. Honestly, it's a terrible thing. So she hopes, I hope I won't be a child molester anymore. I hope I'll be a better, but I can't promise it. I can't promise it. At the end of the day, I might be. I might not be. How even when she's in the line of fire making a statement, can she not even come to that sense of saying, I have done a horrendous thing, I would never do this again, etc. But no, she just lives with hope that she will not carry on being a horrendous child predator. In June 2019, David Bailey also pled guilty to charges to conspiracy to commit first-degree sexual assault and conspiracy to kidnap. And in August of that year, he was sentenced to 25 to 50 years on the conspiracy to commit first-degree criminal sexual conduct and 5 to 50 years for conspiracy to kidnap. Then on the 15th of July 2019, Jamie LaPointe, she pled guilty to first-degree child sexual conduct for the offences involving that child that she babysat. And this offence was recorded on video in January 2016, and that was an actual offence against a two-year-old. It is just grotesque. Under questioning, she literally detailed how she used her phone to video herself digitally penetrating the two-year-old child at the direction of her husband, and then she sent the video to him. Now, again, that idea of being directed by my husband, can you imagine how the world would be if you just did what other people told you? I mean, that's not how it works. Lots of us have relationships, we love our partners, we want to please them, and we will do our best often to do so. Sometimes I won't do my best. I'll try, you know, I'll try. I make him nice food, that's all I'm saying. Just, there are certain other things that sometimes I really can't be bothered with. A lot of us feel that way. What I'm saying is, that sounds wrong now. Everyone's going to be sitting there going, what's she talking about? I'm just saying, I'm not always my best. I try to be my best, but the thing about relationships is your partner understands that you can be your best and they love it when you're the best, but they also love you when you're just really average. And he's great with me being really average, which is why we work, because I'm average quite a lot. What I'm saying here is, if I was in a scenario where my husband was like, I need you to do this, and it was illegal, I'd be like, have you lost your mind? Like, have you lost your mind? I've said this just after suggesting maybe that people should be human liquidized. Obviously, intrusive thought, not real. What I'm saying is, in a reality-based scenario, if my husband said, do A, B, or C, and it was going to be illegal, then I would firstly think there was something seriously going on with him. And secondly, if it was anything to do with harming another human being, and my God, if it was to do with harming a child, the divorce papers would be served immediately, and I would literally have an electric fence around my children whenever he was near, because you just know nothing could incite you to do this kind of thing. So the idea that he's commanding that she do this and she does this, I give them no excuse. If your partner asks you to do something so grotesque, the answer is no, and then you call emergency services. But she goes ahead and does this to this poor two-year-old child. Now, although LaPointe actually went into detail about what she and Bailey did to the child, he actually wasn't prosecuted for that as part of his plea. Three other charges were also dismissed by prosecutors in exchange for the guilty plea, so she was sentenced to a minimum of 25 years in prison. I think she got off very lightly. On the 29th of July 2019, 20-year-old LaPointe also pled guilty to two felonies for her role in the conspiracy to kidnap, sexually assault and murder a child. She also pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to commit first-degree sexual conduct, and that has a maximum sentence of life in prison. A count of conspiracy to commit murder was then dismissed in exchange for these guilty pleas. So in August 2019, she was sentenced to between 25 and 50 years in jail. Now, Matthew Toole, he was the last to plead guilty for the kidnapping plot in December 2019. So he pled guilty to one felony count of conspiracy to commit kidnapping and one felony count of conspiracy to commit first degree criminal sexual conduct on a child. Toole was considered to be the leader of the group. In courts, he basically hung his head. He said nothing, said nada, just kept quiet. And in January 2020, he was given the sentence of a minimum of 25 years for the criminal sexual conduct charge and a minimum of 7 years for the kidnap charge. Those sentences are going to be served concurrently with his previous charge again. I know that when you get a minimum of 25 years, that doesn't mean that you're ever going to get out. You know, you can be seen as a danger and be kept in. But I think concurrent just makes a mockery. Why should he get to serve those charges at the same time? Why can't he just have to serve them one after the other? But this is the way it is. I do feel at times there is a weakening of the way that we treat these kind of predators. I think that more and more there is this coming to conclusions that somehow lesser sentences can be effective, and I just don't buy into it at all. I don't think we should ever take risks with children. These kind of high-level perpetrators and predators will always be that way, and I don't think that he's ever going to be safe to walk the streets. Now, since Jamie LaPointe's conviction, she actually has argued that her plea was involuntary and that she'd been induced to enter into the plea agreement by a promise for concurrent sentences when consecutive sentences were basically not possible. So essentially, she was saying that she'd been fed this lie that she could end up with consecutive sentences, but that actually that would never have been the case. I don't know why it shouldn't be the case. I think it should be the case. But nonetheless, obviously what they say is you get the most severe penalty for the most severe crime, and then the lesser penalties just kind of get brought in as years, but years served because you're doing the longer sentence. So she said, listen, this was a carrot dangled that was never there to be a carrot. Now, in 2021, the Court of Appeals determined that it was not wrong to deny LaPointe to withdraw her guilty plea and disagreed that her pleas were illusory. So LaPointe then appealed her case to the Michigan Supreme Court in February 2022. But LaPointe's conviction and sentence were affirmed by the Supreme Court. They were like, yeah, you're still going down for that long. So the earliest that she can be released is of August 2043, which is a very long time down the road. But it still means that there's a strong possibility that she will absolutely be free one day. And like I said, when it comes down to it, do we want to take risks with these kind of individuals? It's a question that I ask. I genuinely feel that these kind of people are a danger no matter how old they are, no matter how many years that they serve. Think of what would have occurred if that kidnapping had actually taken place. We were probably looking at a group of people who became child serial killers. We're talking about the next Myra Hindley and Ian Brady. We're talking about individuals titillated and tantalized by the idea of extreme torture and killing of children. How will they ever, ever be safe to walk our streets again? I'd love to know your thoughts on this case. I know it's one which will provoke and will also invoke a sense of rage. I also know that many of you who've been abused will really connect with how horrific it is when people talk about those being abused in the past becoming abusers in the future, because it's just not statistically true. Like I said, yes, when you look at the backgrounds of paedophiles who abuse children, they often have been abused, but they are a fragment statistically of the amount of people that are abused, meaning that the vast, vast, vast majority of individuals who abuse as children do the absolute opposite of want to harm children. They want to protect them at all costs. But just like serial killers are born, paedophiles are born, some of those paedophiles will also be molested as kids. It's as simple as that. But that doesn't make people who are abused abusers, quite the contrary. And I just want that to be the final note in this, because I think it triggers so many individuals when that kind of conversation occurs. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.